This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
So, good afternoon, everyone. We have Kaveh with us and on the screen. And Dawn on the screen, welcome. And we have someone new with us in the Zendo. So could we do names again? I'll begin, Carolyn.
Jerome.
Allison.
Jane.
Chuck.
Bill.
Wayne.
Curtis.
Marika.
Michael.
Judy,
Pamela,
Emily.
And before we continue our discussions of the precepts, I'd like to invite Samantha Padra into the room with his faithful companion, the white elephant. So I'm sorry to have missed sitting with you some today. It's really quite odd and quite unusual for me. So, but thanks to you all, thanks to being here, thanks to Emily's wonderful treatment during lunch. I'm feeling much better, and what I have is what happened is I it's nothing serious or life threatening. It's just it's a condition of being human, a body that sometimes happens to people. Often as we get older, but not necessarily. It's sciatica, so it goes down those big nerves run down the sides of the sits bones, and it can get quite intense. So I'm practicing, as a couple of people have brought up here, what's self-care and what's selfishness, or I'm trying to practice the middle way here and take care, greet my sciatica with care and attention and respect. And so I'm going to continue on, and maybe I won't. Maybe you'll see me gone sometimes, but it looks very good now. I also have a wonderful example of my teacher, Angie. Angie had a lot of this kind of physical ailment as she grew older, and she showed us all with such grace and perseverance. So I'm hoping to emulate her. So another thing I wanted to mention before we do the precepts is that we will be doing a full moon chant tonight, taking the Bodhisattva vows, the pure precepts, and the refuges, and then the grave precepts. And we try to coordinate this with the full moon at Sesshin, and we have a really beautiful full moon tonight. So we will be, we'll come to the Zendo after dinner and have a sitting, and then right after the sitting, instead of doing Kinhin, we will walk out to the patio. I believe is going to be the best place. I've been looking every night, and I think we'll get a really have a beautiful full moon shining right on us. And then we'll gather in a circle, and we'll chant the precepts together. The way I learned it from Angie, who learned it from Coben, was call and response. And then after we chant the pre, oh, and Also, you will have a copy of the precepts. Pamela will make sure you have a copy. And so you'll take your sheet of paper and a flashlight if you feel you need one. It's a pretty full moon, but whatever you feel comfortable navigating the terrain with. And then after we've finished the chant, then there's an opportunity for repentances or acknowledgments, as I like to call them. So acknowledging if anything has gone on in the session that you feel like your behavior wasn't quite right to some situation or some person, then you can just simply acknowledge that. And you don't have to think about it a lot or analyze or go through any list in your mind like, well, what did I do that to then who? And, you know, it's just whatever comes in the moment when we're out there. So that's the way that will, I think, will transpire. And I just mentioned Pamela's name, and I had made a little note, and then I overlooked it without my glasses, that even when I'm not in the room, you have Pamela, who's the head student now, and Pamela is very skillful and very, very capable and to hold the space and to take care. That's what she's doing this period of Shuso, being the Tanto and taking care. So we'll continue on with the fourth precept. And the seventh, the fourth is manifesting truth and communicating truth, being truthful in speech, or in short, the negative form, prohibitory form is no lying. And as Bodhidharma and many other great ancestors remind us, there is no lying. There's in this unconceivable illuminosity that is the Dharma, a lie cannot enter one's mind or go out of one's mouth. So, nevertheless, in life, sometimes it happens that we find ourselves in situations where, well, do we need to tell a lie to protect someone or to, mostly for that kind of reason, to keep someone from harm when telling the truth might not do it? And often we just, when we lie, exaggeration is a form of lying, we're just kind of reifying the small self. But there can be situations that, that aren't so easy to decipher what's a lie and what's not. Here's a little story from the Chan tradition. So there was a monk sitting at a crossroads, and a man came by who was a hunter. And he said to the monk, I'm a poor man and I don't have land to farm, but I need to feed my family. So did you notice, I do hunting, did you notice which way that rabbit went? Did it go in that direction or that direction? And the koan is, what should the monk answer? Should he direct the hunter away from the rabbit or toward the rabbit? So this story, it also brings up how the precepts all work together. And I think we've seen that as we've been practicing and studying with them this week. They all kind of intertwine in a way. So the seventh precept is also about speech, and it reminds us that we have a tendency to puff ourselves up. So practice modesty and extol others. Not take all the credit for ourselves or any of the credit. Always be being as best we can aware when how much we owe to others and when it's really appropriate to tell them, to tell another person, or to tell a group of people how well they're doing or how much they're doing, to show our gratitude in that way and not put ourselves first. Not blaming others, not elevating self, not denigrating others, even in little snarky put downs. There's a lot of our common speech in our culture is a lot of that goes on. So the precepts remind us to be aware of that and tune into that. So it's also abstaining from harsh speech and not just yelling or calling names, but any harsh speech. So I think this is also true for nonverbal speech, and perhaps even more so because we aren't often aware of our nonverbal speech, but we can be aware of it. It's always possible to be aware of what kind of expression we have, or what kind of the tone in our words, the emphasis on certain words, the way you say a sentence can be very differently construed. So all that's just something that that the seventh precept reminds us to be aware of. And with all beings, we're very sensitive creatures. And we share that with animals. And those of us who live with animals or who know animals know how easily our animal friends can be upset or happy with our speech, the way we talk to them. So Buddhism has, especially early Buddhism, says a lot about speech. There are many suttas that that address speech in the early Buddhist teachings. And just one that's short and really emphasizes the positive is what the Buddha said in one sutta. Says, when asked, well, when to speak, he said, speak at the right time, speak truthfully, kindly, speak to another's benefit, and most of all, speak with a mind of goodwill. He also mentioned gossip and idle chatter, and that also is pretty common in our culture. I think we're all pretty aware of that, but it helps to remember that these are part of our precepts also. And at the same time, we are story-making beings. We have That's how we learn. It's how we become close to one another in its positive sense. So we can still tell stories. It doesn't mean that we're gossiping or idle chatter. So one thing is to listen to oneself as one speaks, to hear the tone of voice and to be aware of one's expressions if one can. And I think I mentioned the pause, relax, and open before speaking as a part of dialogue, which is a separate practice from the insight tradition. So another thing is really listening to others when they speak, rather than think, because somebody may say something and right away the mind is very quick and goes to, oh, I agree with that or I disagree with that. But just as best one can, letting that go and hearing someone completely out and then speaking, not thinking about what you're going to say next, what we want to say. And these are all pretty basic things that hopefully our mothers and fathers clued us into at an early age. But there are a lot of outside forces in the world we live in, so it's nice to remember them now and then. Having a mind of goodwill. Dogen also mentions that. I can't recall at this moment where, but the mind of goodwill is maybe carrying that with us at all times. So I'm going to end today with two versions of a Dogen poem called Zazen. And the first version is by Kaz Tanahashi. The moon abides in the midst of serene mind. Billows break into light. And the second translation of Zazen is by Stephen Hine. The moon reflected in a mind clear as still water. Even the waves breaking are reflecting the light. So I thank you for your attention and invite you to join in the dialogue. Pamela.
Thank you. I wondered if you had any insights into how to forgive oneself for stupid things that come out of one's mouth.
So I'm not hearing you well with the mask.
I'm sorry. I have sometimes said things, even during sesshin, that just roll off the tongue, not intending to hurt. They just like glib, you know, I'm glib. And I don't appreciate my glibness so much. And I have a hard time forgiving myself for it, honestly. I feel really bad, even though often I have apologized and people say, you know, don't worry about it. People say, you know, I didn't hear it. But I hear it. I hear myself. And it's, I guess I feel like I know perfection will be denied. Okay, I get that. But I feel like I'm, you know, so human. Let's put it that way. I'm ridiculously human. So I wondered if you have any insight into forgiving myself for my ridiculousness.
Well, it's a big practice for me. I feel that I share that tendency a bit to be speaking and having things roll out the mouth. But what I hear you asking is, saying and then asking how to work with this and saying, I have a hard time forgiving myself. And it is your work, so that is your work, is to forgive yourself. And so it's perhaps not so helpful to apologize to someone, because that just, they, as you gave the example, they may not have taken it a different way. We really can't ultimately know another's mind. That's why it's always good to keep the mind of goodwill as best we can, and attribute that to others until, you know, it's clear. I mean, we can't be foolish about letting people say anything to us, or much less do anything to us. But that would be my main thing. That's what I do. I notice it and don't dwell on it, and then on to this is not my intention, but it came out, and so I'll just reaffirm my attention. It's reaffirming. Oh, Mike.
Just a quick question. I mean, you started with the parable of the monk sitting there and the rabbit coming by, and the hunter saying, you know, which way did the rabbit go? You could say, what rabbit? but then the hunter doesn't get to eat. But that's not your concern. Your concern is, if you take a side there, I mean, we kill to eat, you know. You take a side, you take either the rabbits or the hunters. You have to pick a, you can't have to take a side, or you could just abstain and say, no, what rabbit? Because specifically, maybe it's a rabbit that's 10 miles away, you know, technically speaking. It's a tricky question.
Well, that's an answer to the question. But I would say maybe it's a little more complicated than that. Maybe that, because here's where the precepts come together. So compassion for the hunter and his family, yes, the monk will make that distinction if he goes on that side. But then lying, which is, we've covered that a little earlier and talking about it today. If he didn't see the rabbit, he could say, what rabbit? But otherwise, he would be saying, he would be kind of dodging the issue. Mm-hmm. So what is the, I mean, all of these, this one anyway, and many other koans that I've come across, not that I study koans, but I read them, are point to being present in the moment. So that's when you can't have the fixed answer. That's one possible answer. He could say that. So, and you might say that if you were in that situation. But it's really being present to see what is the wisest appropriate response in the moment. So it is a good response, but it depends on where the monk, where his mind of goodwill was. Thank you.
Kaveh had a question.
Kaveh.
It was actually more comment. I don't know any teacher that exemplifies right speech as much as you, actually, and the right way to listen. I just want to say that my mouth runs all the time. I have a very hard time controlling my mouth, even now, for saying this. But you, more than anybody I know, you exemplify right speech. I wish I could learn one iota of the way you speak and the way you listen. I have I have not heard you once say something glib. So I just want to say that. That's my comment.
Thank you, Kaveh. I must be on my best behavior when I'm around you.
No wonder. I'm a judgmental, I'll filter myself there to not go into wrong speech, but I'm sorry if I did that to you. But anyway, thank you. Thank you, Carol. Thank you. Oh, there's one other thing I want to say. You know, when you were talking about, when you're asking Pamela, I had the same problem. I'm really hard on myself. And I don't know if she has that problem, but I have that problem. But I was reading Ushiyama Roshi, and when he talks about the four seals, Ushiyama Roshi, he said, we're all an accident. Since we are an accident, our thoughts are an accident. So then it goes into open your hand of thought. So the way we judge ourselves, either way, good or bad, in his opinion, is not the point. Open the hand of thought. So that's something I learned from him. Now, hearing that and putting it to practice is two different things, but I just wanted to share that. Maybe somebody else can put it to more practice than I can.
Thank you, Kaveh. So that's where the mind of goodwill comes in, I think, because we can say things or even give people a look, which is a form of speech. So that's the nonverbal speech that's disrespectful in some way. And people are sensitive. People pick it up. So think of an example. An example isn't coming up right at this moment. Maybe if I make another point, it will. We don't know where people are coming from, so it's tricky to say everything exactly that won't give people offense. So it is a practice, and to know what to say when. I remember practicing many, many years ago with at Spirit Rock in the Insight tradition with a group of people who were taking the leadership training and practice training. And the people of color talked about that, these microaggressions, and used the phrase, it's like death by 1,000 paper cuts. I mean, each little thing. So being dismissive in any way is what I understand as microaggression, and it can be in speech or be in ignoring, just not acknowledging that another person's in the room. There's a really wonderful American poet. She's a Black woman, Claudia Rankine, and she has a book called Citizen, which is like a prose poem. And she addresses this about being in a room where someone didn't even acknowledge that she was there. So it's looking at a situation with when you come in contact with people at where they might be coming from with a mind of goodwill. And being careful, that's the way I would say one could work with, in a work situation, it's common with microaggression. It's kind of a denigration of someone, a putting down of someone by not recognizing them. And it's usually not like, well, because you're Black or because you're whatever. you don't understand. It's usually not, you know, obvious. That's why it's called micro. So I don't have a lot of experience with it, so I can't address it more than that. I hope that touched on something.
Right? Because I think they know and I know that we're both working on it, right?
Right.
It's just part of our conditioning and our background, and all we can do is just try to be better. I notice this more in my workplace, right? And I have a long time. I mean, especially, you know, when the conversations are more online. It's a little more, you know, the dialogue is a little more awkward, right? So those things, mm-hmm. to me, they pop out more.
Mm-hmm.
So even then, I think these online conversations require a little more skill to, like, give take space, right?
Thank you for sharing that. Bill.
I'm just going to be a little bit of a smartass on this one, but because I'm taking it seriously, and I'm thinking to myself, does truth, do I really think that truth in and of itself has any virtue? And I'm thinking about, in Buddhism, there's some standard for skillful speech that's like true, kind, and timely. Is that, am I forgetting something? And so I'm kind of playing this through in my head, and I'm thinking about a real world example. So I read an article in the New York Times or the Washington Post or something about how it must have been about a year ago, and it was about how the CDC published some guidance saying that, like, something like fewer than 10% of COVID infections occur outdoors, which is factually true. But this article was kind of really taking them to task, because it's like, it almost never happens, right? It's like saying, like, fewer than a million deaths by shark attack happen each year. And, you know, it's actually kind of misleading. It's a true but misleading statement that suggests that being outdoors is kind of a somewhat risky activity, when I guess the evidence shows that it's not. So one example, I don't want to go too far into that, but certainly it's possible to be, like, truthful and misleading or malicious or kind of you name it. So I just offer that up. I mean, you've already kind of acknowledged some of the complexities there, but the more I think about it, the less clear it
is. Well, maybe remembering those five, is it timely? Is it true? So that's more, yeah, true. It's language. True can be, you know, an actual lie or not a factual thing. But then there are, yeah, shades of truth. And is it beneficial? Is it to the benefit. So that's what, it must be so hard to be somebody who works in the CDC and working with COVID. I mean, you know, really basically, it's, we don't know a lot. We don't know a lot. We know some things, but we're always being surprised by something else. So it must be so hard. But people that have to craft those statements, and often they don't have a lot of time to think it through. So, and they don't have a practice that conditions them to think, is it beneficial? You know, is it really helpful? Is it really going to be helpful to tell people, you know, only 10% occur? I mean, it actually kind of worked the other way. It seems to me that it just, a lot of people said, well, okay, then why bother, you know? So those are all of our practice questions in our lives. That's what we work with. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jikoji, please visit us on the web at jikoji.org.